Chapter 37. Named it. You won't refuse? We thought of going away, interposed Lucetta, looking at Farfrae anxiously. It was only a fancy, Farfrae murmured. Won't refuse if it is the wish of a respectable majority in the council. Very well, then, look upon yourself as elected. We have had older men long enough. When he was gone, Farfrae said musingly, see now how it's ourselves that are ruled by the powers above us. We plan this, but we do that. If they want to make me mayor, I will stay, and Henchard must rave as he will. From this evening onward, Lucetta was very uneasy. If she had not been imprudence incarnate, she would not have acted as she did when she met Henchard by accident a day or two later. It was in the bustle of the market, when no one could readily notice their discourse. Michael, said she, I must again ask you, what I asked you months ago, to return me any letters or papers of mine, that you may have, unless you have destroyed them. You must see how desirable it is that the time at Jersey should be blotted out, for the good of all parties. Why, bless the woman! I packed up every scrap of your handwriting, to give you in the coach, but you never appeared. She explained how the death of her aunt had prevented her taking the journey on that day. And what became of the parcel then, she asked. He could not say he would consider. When she was gone, he recollected that he had left a heap of useless papers in his former dining room safe built up in the wall of his old house now occupied by Farfrae. The letters might have been amongst them. A grotesque grin shaped itself on Henchard's face. Had that safe been opened? On the very evening which followed this, there was a great ringing of bells in Casterbridge, and the combined brass, wood, catgut, and leather bands played round the town with more prodigality of percussion notes than ever. Farfrae was mayor the 200th odd of a series forming an elective dynasty dating back to the days of Charles I, and the fair Lucetta was the courted of the town. But, the worm I the bud Henchard, what he could tell. He, in the meantime, festering with indignation at some erroneous intelligence of Farfrae's opposition to the scheme for installing him in the little seed shop, was greeted with the news of the municipal election which, by reason of Farfrae's comparative youth, and his Scottish nativity a thing unprecedented in the case, had an interest far beyond the ordinary. The bell ringing, and the band playing, loud as Tamerlan's trumpet, goaded the downfallen Henchard indescribably. The ousting now seemed to him to be complete. The next morning he went to the cornyard as usual, and about 11 o'clock Donald entered through the green door, with no trace of the worshipful about him. The yet more emphatic change of places between him and Henchard which this election had established renewed a slight embarrassment in the manner of the modest young man. But Henchard showed the front of one who had overlooked all this, and Farfrae met his amenities halfway at once. I was going to ask you, said Henchard, about a packet that I may possibly have left in my old safe in the dining room. He added particulars. If so, it is there now, said Farfrae. Have never opened the safe at all as yet, for I keep my papers at the bank, to sleep easy o' nights. It was not of much consequence to me, said Henchard. But I'll call for it this evening, if you don't mind. It was quite late when he fulfilled his promise. He had primed himself with grog, as he did very frequently now, and a curl of sardonic humor hung on his lip as he approached the house, as though he were contemplating some terrible form of amusement. Whatever it was, the incident of his entry did not diminish its force, this being his first visit to the house since he had lived there as owner. The ring of the bell spoke to him like the voice of a familiar drudge who had been bribed to forsake him. The movements of the doors were revivals of dead days. Farfrae invited him into the dining room, where he at once unlocked the iron safe built into the wall, his, Henchard's safe, made by an ingenious locksmith under his direction. Farfrae drew thence the parcel and other papers, with apologies for not having returned them. Never mind, said Henchard dryly. He fact as they are letters mostly. Yes, he went on, sitting down and unfolding Lucetta's passionate bundle. Here they be. That ever I should see him again. I hope Mrs. Farfrae is well after her exertions of yesterday. As he has felt a bit weary, and has gone to bed early on that account. Henchard returned to the letters, sorting them over with interest, Farfrae being seated at the other end of the dining table. Oh, don't forget, of course, he resumed, that curious chapter in the history of my past which I told you of, and that you gave me some assistance in. These letters are, in fact, related to that unhappy business. Though, thank God, it is all over now. What became of the poor woman? Asked Farfrae. Luckily she married, and married well, said Henchard. Oh, that these reproaches she poured out on me do not now cause me any twinges, as they might otherwise have done. Just listen to what an angry woman will say. Farfrae, willing to humor Henchard, though quite uninterested, and bursting with yawns, gave well-mannered attention. For me, Henchard read, there is practically no future. A creature too unconventionally devoted to you who feels it impossible that she can be the wife of any other man, and who is yet no more to you than the first woman you meet in the street such a one. I quite acquit you of any intention to wrong me, yet you are the door through which wrong has come to me. That in the event of your present wife's death you will place me in her position is a consolation so far as it goes, but how far does it go? Thus I sit here, forsaken by my few acquaintance, and forsaken by you. Apostrophe, that's how she went on to me, said Henchard, acres of words like that, when what had happened was what I could not cure. Yes, said Farfrae absently, it is the way why women. But the fact was that he knew very little of the sex, yet detecting a sort of resemblance in style between the effusions of the woman he worshipped, and those of the supposed stranger, he concluded that Aphrodite ever spoke thus, whatsoever the personality she assumed. Henchard unfolded another letter, and read it through likewise, stopping at the subscription as before. Her name I don't give, he said blandly. As I didn't marry her, and another man did, I can scarcely do that in fairness to her. T.R.U., said Farfrae. But why didn't you marry her, when your wife Susan died? Farfrae asked this and the other questions in the comfortably indifferent tone of one whom the matter very remotely concerned. Ah well you may ask that, said Henchard, the new moon-shaped grin adumbrating itself again upon his mouth. In spite of all her protestations, when I came forward to do so, as in generosity bound, she was not the woman for me. As he had already married another maybe? Henchard seemed to think it would be sailing too near the wind, to descend further into particulars, and he answered yes. The young lady must have had a heart that bore transplanting very readily. As he had, said Henchard emphatically. He opened a third and fourth letter, and read. This time he approached the conclusion, as if the signature were indeed coming with the rest. But again he stopped short. The truth was that, as may be divined, he had quite intended to effect a grand catastrophe at the end of this drama, by reading out the name, he had come to the house with no other thought. But sitting here in cold blood he could not do it. Such a wrecking of hearts appalled even him. His quality was such that he could have annihilated them both in the heat of action, but to accomplish the deed by oral poison was beyond the nerve of his enmity. 35. As Donald stated, Lucetta had retired early to her room because of fatigue. As he had, however, not gone to rest, but sat in the bedside chair reading and thinking over the events of the day. At the ringing of the doorbell by Henchard she wondered who it should be that would call at that comparatively late hour. The dining room was almost under her bedroom. She could hear that somebody was admitted there, and presently the indistinct murmur of a person reading became audible. The usual time for Donald's arrival upstairs came and passed, yet still the reading and conversation went on. This was very singular. She could think of nothing but that some extraordinary crime had been committed, and that the visitor, whoever he might be, was reading an account of it from a special edition of the Casterbridge Chronicle. At last she left the room, and descended the stairs. The dining room door was ajar, and in the silence of the resting household the voice and the words were recognizable. Before she reached the lower flight, she stood transfixed. Her own words greeted her in Henchard's voice, like spirits from the grave. Lucetta leant upon the banister with her cheek against the smooth handrail, as if she would make a friend of it in her misery. Rigid in this position, more and more words fell successively upon her ear. But what amazed her most was the tone of her husband. He spoke merely in the accents of a man who made a present of his time. One word, he was saying, as the crackling of paper denoted that Henchard was unfolding yet another sheet. Is it quite fair to this young woman's memory to read at such length to a stranger what was intended for your eye alone? Well, yes, said Henchard. Why, not giving her name, I make it an example of all womankind, and not a scandal to one. If I were you, I would destroy them, said Farfrae, giving more thought to the letters than he had hitherto done. As another man's wife, it would injure the woman, if it were known. No, I shall not destroy them, murmured Henchard, putting the letters away. Then he arose, and Lucetta heard no more. She went back to her bedroom in a semi-paralyzed state. For very fear she could not undress, but sat on the edge of the bed, waiting. Would Henchard let out the secret in his parting words? Her suspense was terrible. Had she confessed all to Donald in their early acquaintance, he might possibly have got over it, and married her just the same, unlikely as it had once seemed. But for her, or anyone else, to tell him now would be fatal. The door slammed. She could hear her husband bolting it. After looking round in his customary way, he came leisurely up the stairs. The spark in her eyes well nigh went out when he appeared round the bedroom door. Her gaze hung doubtful for a moment, then to her joyous amazement she saw that he looked at her with the rallying smile of one who had just been relieved of a scene that was irksome. She could hold out no longer, and sobbed hysterically. When he had restored her, Farfrae naturally enough spoke of Henchard. If all men he was the least desirable as a visitor, he said. But it is my belief that he's just a bit crazed. He has been reading to me a long lot of letters relating to his past life, and I could do no less than indulge him by listening. This was sufficient. Henchard, then, had not told. Henchard's last words to Farfrae, in short, as he stood on the doorstep, had been well, I'm obliged to E for listening. I may tell more about her someday. Finding this, she was much perplexed as to Henchard's motives in opening the matter at all, for in such cases we attribute to an enemy a power of consistent action which we never find in ourselves or in our friends, and forget that abortive efforts from want of heart are as possible to revenge as to generosity. Next morning Lucetta remained in bed, meditating how to parry this incipient attack. The bold stroke of telling Donald the truth, dimly conceived, was yet too bold, for she dreaded lest in doing so he, like the rest of the world, should believe that the episode was rather her fault than her misfortune. She decided to employ persuasion not with Donald, but with the enemy himself. It seemed the only practicable weapon left her as a woman. Having laid her plan, she rose, and wrote to him who kept her on these tenterhooks. I overheard your interview with my husband last night, and saw the drift of your revenge. The very thought of it crushes me. Have pity on a distressed woman. If you could see me, you would relent. You do not know how anxiety has told upon me lately. I will be at the ring at the time you leave work just before the sun goes down. Please come that way. I cannot rest till I have seen you face to face, and heard from your mouth that you will carry this horseplay no further. To herself she said, on closing up her appeal : if ever tears and pleadings have served the weak to fight the Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.